This is Garnet Lee, and this is the One Up Yours podcast. We're back again. Sorry for the delay and missing you last week, but we've got some folks gathered around the table here. I'm going to let them introduce themselves. Go ahead and introduce yourself, John.
Hello. John Davison, I'm the editorial director of One Up.
I am Jeff Green, the editor-in-chief of Computer Gaming World.
And Jeremy Parrish, features editor of OneUp.com.
So all this week I've been working on the Prey cover story that's been up on OneUp.com. It's really strange to look at a game that had been on the radar so big and then completely disappeared, and it got me thinking about games that get delayed and what happens to them, and the whole weird process of what goes on both on the publisher side and on the gamer side. And there have been a lot of examples of that lately, like we had Cameo. That certainly had bounced around for a long time. There's Final Fantasy XII, which a lot of people have been excited about, and then who knows what's going on with that. It went through, you know, changes at the top and all through the Square Enix deal. So I thought we'd throw that out there and kind of relate about what's going on with games that get delayed. So who's going to jump out there first?
What I really wonder about Prey is, you know, it has been around for so long. You know, there's got to be a whole generation of gamers who don't know this name at all. Or, I mean, that this means nothing to them.
In our office.
Right.
In our office.
Right.
Because there were lots of people who came up to me and didn't know a thing about it.
So what kind of cachet do they have by even, like, using this name still and still saying this is the same game we started in 98? Because those of us who were around when it first was being developed are kind of cynical about it. Right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I made sure to make that point.
The younger people don't know what it is.
The younger people.
Sprouts.
I mean, those under 60.
You're darn kids.
Unlike me.
No, but it's a good point because, I mean, it's not a franchise. It was a tech demo in 98.
Right.
I remember when, you know, they came around and they showed it and it was using some variation of the Doom engine or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it had the portals in it. And that was it. It was barely an idea. And
it was really barely an idea, because did you read like what I wrote on Monday? It was really funny how, like, when it first started with the Rise team, it really was just like a tech idea that mm-hmm. was really the heart of it.
And there was a bunch of stuff around that time, and was this pre-Quake? I guess it was, yeah?
Yeah,
it was
sure.
Yeah. So there was, you know, there was things like Rise of the Triads and all that stuff that was using the Duke Nukem engine, you know, all that 2.5D stuff that was kicking around. And then
So Prey was the Rise of the Triad team.
Right.
When it first started.
Yeah, and we hadn't yet really been through that whole Quake period where everything really started to boom and get faster and use 3D engines. So, like, what is there really to gain from it?
Well, that's what I mean. Like, is there anybody going, yay, Prey is finally coming out? I mean, no offense to the game. I mean, it's beside the point of whether the game is actually good or not. I just wonder what, you know, why not just call it something else now?
I don't think the game designers would take any offense to that either, because it's not, I don't think they're so worried about just creating some mythical, you know, beast that relates back to Prey.
Mm-hmm. But it does make for a more, I mean, from our perspective, it makes a pretty interesting story. How often do you get to say, this game's been in development for 8 years off and on, mm-hmm. and here's what it retains from back then? I mean, you know, there's a lot of teams that haven't been around that long.
Mm-hmm. Right, and so promoting it becomes a big challenge. How do you keep people interested in something? Mm-hmm.
It definitely seems to have changed direction since those early days. I mean, it's got some Turok about it now.
Mm-hmm. Actually, what you were
going
saying
back in 1996
is that a good thing?
I don't know. I remember seeing that original demo and then didn't really pay attention to anything that was going on since, and then we saw it recently, and I was kind of surprised by the direction that it took. I was all prepared for a very pure sci-fi, you know, portal hopping shooter, and there's a sort of mysticism to it came as a bit of a surprise.
Yeah, I think they felt really, and that's kind of so there's another point about delayed games. If your game starts off as a game concept in one generation, delay it too long and the whole landscape of what's going on out there in games changes.
Right.
And I think Prey got completely caught in that, because they no longer felt like, hey, you know, we can't just do a cool shooter. It's got to have more. You know, Half-Life 2 has been out there, and we can't just come out there and have this AAA title and not have story and characters and more to it than just run and shoot.
Half-Life 1 and 2.
Right. Half-Life 1 and 2.
Yeah.
Well, I think despite all the delays and all the changes, there's still a pretty good vibe about Prey. Like, people seem to regard it pretty positively, which isn't always the case with games that get delayed. Mm-hmm. I mean, Duke Nukem Forever is, for a lot of people, a complete joke. Mm-hmm. But Prey, I don't know, people still, maybe because of its obscurity, still seem to think, you know, this could be something interesting.
Well, I think the project getting shut down completely really helped them out a lot, because mm-hmm. by virtue of the fact that it was done, you know, completely put away and off the shelf, you didn't have this constant being strung along things. I mean, because that's the other side. For a gamer, you're interested in games, you're seeing them in magazines, you're seeing them on websites, you're talking about them, you're all excited, and then it's this perpetual hurry up and wait thing. Mm-hmm. And they keep getting the PR out to it, and they keep bringing you new versions, and they have to keep doing that if they're going to maintain, you know, if they're going to maintain the limelight on the thing. Cameo. So, you know, what was it like watching Cameo over the last 5 years?
and since, but hey, we don't talk about that around here.
How many covers has it been on Cameo?
You right. know, I don't think it was on that many.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was one of those weird games where it was like, okay, well, when it gets to the right point, it's going to get the spotlight shone on it. And it lasted so long, and then it was Microsoft tried so hard to convince everyone that, look how great Cameo is. That, I mean, the risk with being that late is the cynicism that comes with it. I mean, the thing about Prey is that, like you were saying, everyone's very open to it and is very, that doesn't appear, and I think it's because it went away completely. And we're still in the surprise phase. Those of us that do remember it, Prey, I remember mm-hmm. that. Yeah, that was going to be kind of cool. But it's that sort of just dragging it out that Cameo went through that people just lost interest.
So how good is Duke Nukem Forever going to have to be?
I don't
think mythically
Duke Nukem cannot possibly meet expectations.
Maybe it just.
Well, I don't know. Do people still have expectations for
right.
Duke Nukem Forever at this point?
Right. Maybe now the cynicism is so high that all it has to do is not suck.
But I don't know. Whatever it does, it's not going to be enough, because there's going to be this thing's been in development for how long, and they, you know, they couldn't do this better than Game X, and they couldn't do right. this better than Game. It's gonna get compared to everything in the genre.
So you think it's going to get slapped down like Daikatana? Basically, people are just going to say, "Well,
but even if it's
crap.
Even if it's good, I mean, Daikatana sucked." But
yeah, I was going to say Daikatana is kind of a funny case, because it's one of those ones that got delayed for a long time, but then it had, you know, metallic frogs,
right? But
and mosquitoes.
But up until the very end, right before it got released, people were still. Like, some people were holding out hope that actually Romero was going to pull it
well,
off.
That's the Romero reality distortion field, though, isn't it? Right. I mean, like, everyone was sort of, you know, well, it's going to be good because he says it is. Mm-hmm. And this was before we didn't believe him anymore.
The Romero right. reality distortion field.
I mean, it was like that in those. I mean, like, anything that any of those guys did, anyone that had any affiliation with id 5-6 years ago, whether they worked there or not, anything that came out of their mouths, everyone believed. Because, you know, they did Doom and they worked on Quake and it was the greatest thing ever and it changed the nature of PC gaming forever. And everyone wanted to believe Daikatana was going to be good.
That's true. Everybody did yeah. want to believe. And then we turned it on.
But I think another yeah. good example lately is, can Tomb Raider Legend possibly live up to?
Right.
I guess it depends on, you know, what people are expecting. If they're just expecting a good Tomb Raider game, I think it'll be fine. If they're expecting something that's as revolutionary as Tomb Raider was 10 years ago, mm-hmm. I mean, they're going to be let down.
The interesting thing there with people's perceptions, though, is that here's a franchise where there have only ever been two good games. Mm-hmm. There's been, what, 6-7 games, 2 movies, a bunch of Game Boy and mobile, and, like, so, I mean, realistically speaking, why are we all holding a candle for that franchise still? I know I want it to be good, but there's something about that game, and it's very late, and it's number 7 or 8 in the franchise or whatever, and we're all holding out hope for it. I mean, that's kind of rare. I mean, I saw you playing it, mm-hmm. and it looked like it might be heading in the right direction.
Yeah, I enjoyed what I played of it. I thought it had kind of that feel that I had with the original game.
Mm-hmm. I saw him playing it, and I fell in love all over again. I mean, I was just crazy for it.
With what, though? What did you fall in love with, though?
So, Tomb Raider has always been, to me, because Tomb Raider, the first game, was one of those first experiences I had as a gamer that really got me hooked on gaming. It was, like, so much fun to be exploring, I should say in 3D gaming, mm-hmm. because it got me, you were exploring and you had some combat, but you had this whole sense of awe when you got in an adventure going, you know, like the whole, when you came upon the Tyrannosaurus Rex. I mean, that's the easy example, but it's the big example. And this was the same way, because it has that sort of Mission Impossible 3 intro scene, which is, yeah, okay, it's kind of cheesy, whatever. But once she gets into the environment, there's that pace to it. It's it's, you know, Che was talking about it. He's like, oh, it's very Prince of Persia. I'm like, no, you know, it's not Prince of Persia.
No, it's a lot more, it's a lot slower and a lot more studied, I think.
Right, right. And you feel like, and you don't feel like an acrobatic prince, you know, from the circus. You feel like an explorer.
Does it do anything for you that it's Tomb Raider and that it's Lara Croft, or could this just be any new game?
It could be any game, really.
The other thing, it totally does it for me that it's Lara. But the original
Tomb Raider, I mean, the other thing that we forget is that when that came out, we had never seen anything like that.
Right. That was
Yeah, that's why I corrected myself. You're right. That's totally different.
I mean, it had its faults. Like, you know, you'd look for the breaks in the textures on the floor and you'd do jumps from one block back or whatever. But I mean, just the spectacle of something on that scale. It didn't exist. I mean,
right,
so you were
right.
playing it as much for the, than it was like, I mean, it truly was.
It was one of those games you just played it to show your friends.
And right. It was showing that PlayStation 1 was a true generational jump. It was the kind of thing that we didn't see in the move from PS1 to PS2. And I'm not sure that we're quite seeing this generation jump either, in that when you went from Genesis and SNES to PS1, I mean, this was a true, like, justifying the price of the console. How do you
have a leap that big? I mean, you go from 2D sprites and everything to this 3D immersive world where everything is surrounding you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, technologically, can you even do that again?
I don't think they can do that. But I think Tomb Raider and a lot of the love for Tomb Raider stems from that. It was like, mm-hmm. this was when video games became something else, and it sucked me in because it was starting to look like something else.
This is one of my favorite conversations in the world about games, which is that we keep looking for that gap, and I don't know that we're going to see that gap anymore, because the technology side of gaming was on the first part of the curve for so many years, and we're very high on that curve now. There's not another jump like that anymore. So, hey, guys, you're going to have to make content.
Yeah, I hate going to the demos now where they keep talking about how we're adding this much more realism, and they zoom in on the guy's face, and you see the nubs of where he just shaved, and I'm like,
that's the price of entry.
I don't give a damn. Show me some good gameplay.
Everything that uses the Unreal Engine, everyone has pockmarks.
Right. Pockmarks. That spells good gaming.
Lance Henriksen, the video game.
If it's a racing game, they show you the paint being scraped off the side of the doors.
Right. I mean, it's nice.
It is great.
I mean, EA showed us Burnout on 360, and it doesn't make that much of a difference. But
I just don't get it. I mean, if, like, you know, if we can argue that Tetris is maybe the greatest game of all time, you know, well, I would argue that. What does realism have to do with whether the game is good or whether you're having, you know, whether what they've done is a polished experience?
It doesn't. And that's
I'm changing the topic here.
I mean, that's the way we roll on the One Up Yours show.
But I mean, I think this speaks to the difference between what Nintendo's doing now and what everyone else is doing. I mean, you look at the next generation, and Microsoft has carved out the, you know, showy graphics and 3D sound and high def era stuff. And Nintendo has said, okay, well, you know, enough of that. We're going for an experience-based thing, and it's innovation. And it does make me wonder what's left in the middle ground for Sony to try and take. But, I mean, with those two extremes taken, but I think Nintendo could really make a big difference. And actually,
absolutely.
There could be, it's not a technological jump in generation, it's just a sort of jump in thinking.
So, and I kind of see a little sub-point to what you were talking about with, you know, what Microsoft pulled out. Microsoft may have established, you know, the showy graphic and all that. What we always talk about is live arcade and what they've done in the online space. So that's kind of where they've really carved out a niche for themselves.
So let's go back to Tomb Raider, though.
Okay.
I mean, Lara Croft, does she, does she still have cachet, do you think, amongst gamers as a character?
I think she actually probably has more cachet among non-gamers.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point.
My girlfriend does not play video games, but she loves Lara Croft because she saw the movies with Angelina Jolie, and she was like, wow, she kicks ass. She's mm-hmm. a cool character. Mm-hmm. Whereas gamers are like, Lara Croft.
Mm-hmm. She has cachet to me because of my generation, but I don't know that to people who didn't play Tomb Raider 1 in its era, does she have cachet? I don't see how she could. I mean, they certainly didn't get it from Tomb Raider 3.
Well, she looks nice.
Culturally, I think, I mean, there aren't many characters that gaming has provided pop culture that are more significant than her. I mean, you got Mario, Sonic, and Lara. And for a lot of people, to your point, I mean, those are probably the three game characters that most non-gamers could name.
And
Pac-Man. Pac-Man, maybe, yeah. But she's the only one that's not a cartoon. Kinda,
but she's also kind of the one that doesn't have a personality, which is kind of a weird, you know. I mean, to me, Lara Croft isn't really a person with a personality and feelings. She's just sort of like a body.
You got to check out the 1UP show, because actually Che was talking to Toby Gard this week earlier, and he brought that subject up, and Toby kind of gave some insight into what the personality of Lara was and what they were trying to, you know, create out of that character.
But I think they got ahead of themselves early on when they were signing her up to model agencies sticking her on, you know, potato chip packets.
Yeah, I don't think that was necessarily the game's fault, though. That was
I think
way ahead of themselves.
Lara, the franchise, was sort of pushed too aggressively.
Yeah, I think when she went on tour with U2, that was kind of
oh my god,
I forgot about that.
Sheer ridiculousness.
Yeah. That's my whole problem with this whole franchise. Like, it's frustrated me because it just seems like if they just had calmed down a long time ago and just made a bigger deal out of every, you know, just have two, like, they could just be on the third Tomb Raider game right now.
Yeah, if that was one of those games that had been delayed and then disappeared entirely like Prey and then brought back, maybe
it would have
there
an
would
event
be more excitement
feel.
For it, right?
You know, like, we just got the press release about how they're they just announced the release date, and it said something like, you know, the most anticipated release of 2006 is finally coming out. And I was like, yeah, to who? Your guys' moms? I mean, so, you know, but it could have been in another universe.
Right. I mean, I like that they were sort of threatening to take a direction with her at one point where it was Lara Croft was going to exist outside of the Tomb Raider universe, and she was going to be this sort of virtual character that could turn up in other franchise games. And they sort of half dabbled in it for a while. Like, didn't she turned up in some other 3D IDOS thing?
Did she?
She did.
Yeah, there was like some allusion to her.
Oh, wow.
And she was gonna she was gonna be, it was gonna sort of transcend traditional character design, and you know, she is a person, and she can she can be in this game, and she can be in her own game, and that was an interesting attitude to explore, but they never delivered on it because it always came back to making it Tomb Raider.
They're not the only ones who have done that. Square tried to do that with Aki Ross from the Final Fantasy movie. They were like, you know, she's going to be in all these movies that don't have anything to do with Final Fantasy. She's going to be a virtual celebrity, and
that's
they ended up
cool.
bankrupting themselves.
So Ubi could do that with like a Sam Fisher and the Prince, you know, from Prince of Persia.
They could be in a buddy picture.
A super friend.
Go on a road movie.
Yeah.
Shooting
I'm
up.
Seeing some time travel in there somewhere, too, probably.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. We can work all that in. Two or three delays, and we can put it on the PS4. So how long? So we started off talking about delays, so maybe we'll wrap up talking about delays. How far can a game get delayed before it doesn't matter anymore? Oblivion 360, or how about...
What is going on with that game?
What
I
is
mean,
going
like
on with
this
that game?
Week, there's all the stuff about the PC version getting sort of crippled, basically,
right,
because of the 360 version, and I mean that has a date now. But I mean, this week's big story was that it now has finalized PC specs.
Right. And so now it has finalized PC specs. I mean, originally it was an Xbox 360 launch game. Well, I guess Jeff, was it originally a PC game?
Originally, if you go way back,
yeah, it was.
I mean, that's where the roots are.
Sure.
And this is nothing. I mean, they talk about delayed games. The Elder Scrolls series is notorious for
delayed games. But Oblivion in and of itself, I mean, it's not particularly... I mean, it's what, 6 months late? Or, you know, it will be 6 months late? I mean, that, it's done Prey 7 years worth of bullshit
in
6 months.
Right, so I was trying to say...
It's a more economical way of...
How do you sort of figure out, you know, what's too long? If you were sitting in the publisher's chair, how would you determine where to stop it? For instance, you know, maybe Oblivion, or how about Gran Turismo PSP? Hello?
I really think it depends on the publisher. It depends on the game. It depends on fan expectations. I mean, you know, you look at Final Fantasy XII, and that's been delayed for years and years. But at the same time, there's still this Final Fantasy viable franchise going on, kind of filling in the space. They keep churning out Final Fantasy VII crap. Final Fantasy XI keeps getting expansion packs. They did Final Fantasy X too. You know, they can keep delaying it until it's good because they have this brand, and it doesn't seem to get old
right.
for most people.
Franchise love. I mean, like, Halo could be November 2007, and you know, people wouldn't mind.
No,
well, I mean, they would mind just pure sort of emotionally, but I think if that's what it takes to get it done, then fine. But it's because Halo can do no wrong. But for some games, I mean, it's like once, like with Prey, once it gets to 5 years, I mean...
Well, maybe it's partially a credibility thing on the developer's part. I mean, it's like, you know, eventually it's going to come out, right? We know eventually there will be a Final Fantasy XII because, well, they've made 11 of them. But with Prey, you know, the track record, not so hot there. With Duke Nukem Forever, you know, the skepticism, well, can these guys do anything?
What was the last 3D Realms game?
Shadow Warrior?
Was it? And that was...
I mean, we could...
It was 97 or so.
Yeah, I mean, that was the last Build Engine game.
What do they do all day over there at that office? They've been making Prey.
They post a lot on Shack News, I noticed.
They've done several versions of Duke Nukem Forever. They actually showed video of gameplay in Duke Nukem Forever at E3 maybe, 4 years ago? There was a scene with Duke in the back of a car with a machine gun or something. There was like an on-rails part.
Right.
And I think that was the last time they really showed anything en masse.
That's crazy.
Well, so better that they delay, though, that they rush, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yes.
I mean, we've seen the ill effects of that, because I just happened to think of Sin, which we're about to get the episodic content from, and it reminded me of when they just threw Sin out the door in order to beat Half-Life.
But did you see what just happened with Heroes 5 this week? That Ubisoft had released the Heroes of Might and Magic 5 multiplayer demo out there, and it got hammered online by the fan community, who was wildly anticipating the thing, but it was obviously, you know, broken and things was completely not working. And it was clear, though, that Ubisoft was putting this demo out because the game was going to come out soon. And the fan community just sort of said, hold on, this game isn't even remotely ready. You can't be thinking about releasing this thing. And they threw up these kind of petitions and stuff. And you see these kind of petitions all the time, and you don't think that they're ever going to get taken seriously. But in this case, Ubisoft said, yeah, you're right. You know, let's not rush this game.
I think that's awesome. And I think that a game being delayed in the grand scheme of things is a far lesser crime than crapping out of a franchise game every year.
Well, in the words of the late working designs, right, mediocrity is forever, delays are just temporary, which you know, might not be the ideal source to cite for something like this, considering what just happened to the company. But I don't think it was delays that put them under. It was, you know, lots of other factors. And as a result, they had a really good reputation among their fans. Like, everyone knew that their games would always be finished products. They'd always have a high-quality translation. And, you know, they basically built their business on their relationship with their fans and their credibility. I think that's a pretty good way to do business if you can pull it off.
Right. Yeah, I've never understood the internet outrage that comes out when people are angry and going to boycott the company because they hear that the game's being delayed. It's like, well, what do you want from them? Do you want them to come out now so
right.
it's lame?
Right, like the Sin effect, or when they threw Battlecruiser out the first time, and you know, they're all broken and they don't work, and then you're waiting for a patch, and then they
Battlecruiser
want you to...
is kind of an unusual.
Yeah, it was delayed and it was rushed, which you don't get into.
It's a pretty neat trick, isn't it?
It is. I mean, you have to really work to pull that off.
Sin kind of surprised me, because I don't remember people being particularly in love with the original Sin.
Well, so the original game was great, and without you know, sacrificing hope any great confidences, it was put out without really the developer even realizing that it had been put out, and the code that actually went and, you know, that came up in the first release was still something they were working in progress. As a matter of fact, the first patch I heard through somebody actually had some of the things they had to do was
well evaded, Garnet.
They actually had to pull developer hooks out of it because they still had development hooks inside that were like refreshing level builds as if it were sitting on the network and pulling resources across the network.
Wow. So it was like insert gameplay here. So it's
right,
effects,
right, right. And it was, and so it was actually having to refresh stuff within the level as if it was looking for assets, because that way, you know, designers in different part of the studio could be, you know, building new assets in, and they didn't have to recompile every time.
But that's an interesting fact, because like the Sin episodes thing, I mean, it's like Prey. I mean, to a lot of people, they don't realize there was a Sin. How long was it? 6, 7 years ago?
Right.
8 years ago? I mean, I don't remember much. It had a girl in it. That's pretty much all I remember. There was
well,
a girl
really
and a guy.
What's really cool is, if you pre-order it before, when the preload comes up in this month, you'll actually get the original Sin in the final, you know, golded, perfect version through Steam when you pre-order.
That's cool.
That's a really cool pre-order promo. And so you'll be able to play that, you know, and then once the preload's finished, whenever that is, I don't know what the time frame is. I don't think they've nailed it down, but a couple, 3 weeks after that or whatever. Then you'll be able to play the new episode, and you'll have the context of, oh, well, here's where Sin came from.
See, episodes and digital distribution brings a different dynamic into this conversation, in that once you're, I mean, what happens when you're halfway through a season of a game?
And they get delayed.
And they get delayed. Well, I mean, that's justifiable outrage from the community. But, you know,
that's going to be a tough challenge.
And I think some of the stuff that Valve's planning with Half-Life, is they're opening themselves up to this, because it's not like Sin where it's like what the game's carved up into six chunks or whatever it is, mm-hmm. and you know they can schedule it. But I think this idea of, you know, you have Aftermath and then this next one when we've done with it, I think that could be much more frustrating than waiting 5 years for the sequel.
Completely agree.
So the next chapter is going to be next month. Oh, it's been delayed a couple of months.
You know, that's kind of the way it's going with Bone. You know, the Telltale Games is putting out Bone based on the Jeff Smith comic, and the first part of that came out, and it's, God, what was it, like 4 hours? It was some ridiculous...
It was like four or five. It was pretty brief.
Yeah,
it was
right. Short. And it ends essentially on a cliffhanger, you know, a comic book style cliffhanger, which was exactly out of the story itself. But now it's months later, and people paid $20 for that first download. Well, where's part two? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's definitely the avenue that I think episodic content will go, is because they're going to want you hooked in to come back to that next one. And that's kind of one of those gaps, is that episodic television is week after week. You know, we all love 24, and one of the big things they're doing to capitalize on that this season is a full
season. But they make
season.
All 24 of them in one
right.
go.
Right, yeah, they make it all in one go, right. So it's a little different. It's not quite exactly as some people have put it, you know. Episodic gaming is not television.
With television, they're kind of beholden to the network and to advertisers. And maybe, you know, it's just gaming hasn't evolved to the point where they have that kind of, that kind of accountability to someone else besides gamers or shareholders or whatever. So, I don't know, maybe we'll see as digital distribution develops something along those lines coming into place.
That'd be cool. I guess we're about ready to wrap it up, huh, guys?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. You got anything else you want to throw out there? That was fun, huh?
So how long are we going to give Diablo 3 before we start boycotting Blizzard not putting it out?
When did the clock start ticking on Diablo 3?
Oh, it's not ticking yet officially. I'm not saying that.
Yeah,
with any knowledge.
I thought I saw an end timer on your desk.
Hey,
I know nothing.
I saw yesterday there was a lot of speculation that they were working on it because of some job ad.
Were job ads on the Blizzard site that, you know, basically they, you know, everything, every job
must
listing
understand
referred,
Satan.
Yeah. Well, referred to Diablo 1 and 2, so, you know, doesn't take a rocket scientist there, but.
Or StarCraft 2. When did the clock start ticking on that?
I know nothing.
All right, everyone. Well, I guess we're going to have a little time to get the truth serum into Jeff Green so that we can have that information for you in a future episode.
No!
If you've ever watched 24 like we have, you'll know what we're going to do to him. And until next time, if you want to come by the 1UP.com forums, we'll be looking for posts. Other than that, we are out.